The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous!
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. I am Chris Jericho. This is the Pot of Thunder. And rocked and roll. And today we've got four-time Stanley Cup champion Darren McCarty will be here. A remedy of boredom has arrived. We're ready to rock and roll. So long, 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 long. Yeah, the theme of the Pot of Jericho. Rocking it. All right, always got to get the blood pumping with that. I love that part, man. How could you not love that? Got a lot of Canadiana on the show today between Darren McCarty, fine, Ontario native. Plus, I was not born in Canada, but I'm half Canadian. My parents were born in Canada. I was born in the States, so I'm a dual citizen. But I did grow up in Canada. So, a lot of different things. I know people in the States sometimes look at the weird people up north as being a little strange, which we are. And we also have a lot of different words that only are used in Canada. And a lot of people in the States don't really know what those words mean. So I got in the studio. I brought in my friend from Thompson, Manitoba. Gord Canuck is his nickname. There's never been a guy named Gord who wasn't Canadian. And Gord's going to explain to us what some of these Canadian words mean. How you doing, Gord?
Hey, how's it going, eh? Good to talk to you, Chris. I haven't talked to you in a long time, eh? It's pretty good, eh?
I noticed your lumberjack that you're wearing, a lumberjack jacket. It's very cool. You got a toque on?
Yeah, I got a little toque on, eh? A lot of people down here think it's called a beanie. What the hell's a beanie? It's called a toque. You put it on, it keeps your ears warm. I mean, come on, eh?
Yeah, it's kind of a strange, you know, people have a lot of misconceptions about Canadians and don't know a lot about Canada around the world. Now, let me ask you this, Gord. There's a whole list of Canadian words, terms, phrases, slang that people in the States don't know. Let's go through a few of them and you can explain them. What exactly does weeds mean?
Weeds ain't just the things that grow on your lawn, eh? The back of your hair, you know, when you got the hockey hair going on there. And it's kind of flying out of the back of your helmet. Well, those are called weeds. So you got to need a weed cut, and you go in there and you get a beaner, which is when they cut all your weeds off, eh?
Oh, interesting. I wasn't really aware of that. Okay, and you also have peelers. Explain to us what a peeler is.
Yeah. You go to the strip club, eh, and the peelers are there. Also known as rippers. And you yell, you say, hey, take your clothes off, ripper. And show us what you got there, peeler. So sometimes on a Saturday night, I go have a couple suds and go see the peelers.
Oh, so peelers is a stripper.
Yeah, but it's a peeler. It's a ripper.
Okay. That's another very cool example. Peelers and rippers are strippers. Okay, so what about when you say I'm going to tune you?
I tune you. I'll take you outside and tune you, eh, Jericho? You're getting a fat lip on you there, eh? I'm going to tune you and tune your ass.
Oh, so it means like you're going to beat somebody up?
Yeah, I'm going to tune you.
All right, cool. What about Boxing Day? What exactly is Boxing Day?
What is some kind of idiot? Boxing Day is the day after Christmas, eh? It's December 26th. That's the day after Christmas.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not really, is that like some kind of holiday?
You go to the Zellers and get a good bargain, eh?
And what exactly is Zellers?
I've been forgotten everything. Zellers is like a Canadian Target. We go to Zellers on Boxing Day, and we buy some good bargains and go watch some peelers.
Okay, and how about a parkade? Any idea? Nick, do you know what a parkade is? See, the word parkade is not known here in the States, Gord.
Are they some kind of dummies? It's where you go park your car, eh? It's called like the underground parkade.
Oh, so it's like a parking garage.
It's a parkade.
Okay. How about the thing in your sink that you put, you know, like eggshells in, or, you know, when you scrape your dinner off and you turn it on? What is it garburator?
Yeah, it's a garburator.
We would refer it as a garbage disposal.
No, it's a garburator. You put your waste and your garbage down in the sink and you turn on the garburator.
Definitely something not really known here. And the final one, Gord, what is a rye and coke?
It's a whiskey and coke. You get some Crown Royal, you put it in the glass, you put some ice in there, you throw some Diet Coke in there, you got a rye and coke, you go get pissed, eh? And then you go for a rip. You go for a ride with your friends, eh?
Oh, okay, we weren't really sure about that, about what the rye was. So now we know weeds, peelers, tunia, go for a rip, Boxing Day, parkade, garburator, and rye. That's the Canadian lesson for the day. Thanks, Gord Canuck, for coming in the studio.
Anytime, eh? It's a little bit chilly in here, eh? I'm going to leave an extra toque for you and some earmuffs, too. All right, we're going to listen to some Kim Mitchell and go crazy. See you later, eh?
Gord Canuck, good friend of mine, explaining all things Canadian to you. And he's crazy, man. Eating some Tim Hortons as he left here. Hey, Darren McCarty is coming up. Thanks for listening today. And thanks for supporting the show by clicking that Amazon banner on the Talk is Jericho page every time you do your shopping. Just go to podcastone.com, click on Talk is Jericho, then hit the Amazon link. Whenever you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so I can keep doing this for you for free. When I bring in guests like Gord Canuck, trust me, I got to pay him some big bucks to get him in here to divulge the Canadian secrets, to buy new garburators for his house. He might even buy a garburator from Amazon. If he does, I hope he goes through Talk is Jericho. And hey, since I'm doing this show twice a week now, every Wednesday and every Friday, I need all the help I can get. So, thanks for supporting the show. Thanks for downloading twice a week. And thanks for telling your friends to hit the download button, too. All right, we're going to get to Darren McCarty.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
On the line with me right now, four-time Stanley Cup champion. Four times. That is insane. Darren McCarty is here. How you doing, Darren? Good, man. I think the last time we saw each other was in Detroit.
And you were, Fozzie was rocking out. It was, I think, Shinedown and Godsmack you were playing before, but it was always great to see you. Always great to run into you a few times a year, bud.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It was a good time. It's funny because I was looking through, I dumped my pictures into the iPhone picture thing, and I saw a picture of you and I. We're just roaring. I don't know what we were laughing at, but we were having the best time.
it's similar every time we get together. So
yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Well, it's good to talk to you. I just read your amazing new book, My Last Fight: The True Story of a Hockey Rockstar. A very, very cool a book. Very honest, that's definitely for sure. No holds barred. You open up your entire life, your entire story. What was it that made you decide to write a book in the first place, just to start off?
People had come up to me, and you know how it goes, that, you know, since when I retired or near the end of my career, and, you know, you should write a book, you know, you got so many things. And I was like, nah, you know, whatever, think about it, sort of blew it off. And then when my good buddy Bob Probert passed away, and I read his book and was like just blown away with how unabashed honesty he had in his
right.
book, and just let it out. And, you know, he was a great buddy of mine. And you know, at that moment, it just hit me where it was like, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I got to do it. I got to give my truth, and I got to be 100% honest like he was, or else, you know what, it's just smoke and mirrors, and it doesn't, you know, every book, you know, it doesn't end in a happy ending always, you know, mm-hmm. but it just had to break out life, and, you know, I wanted to get my truth out there, and, you know, this is, people have a lot of perceptions because I've gone, you know, between the alcoholism and the drugs and the bankruptcies and the divorces and the adulteries and, you know, you name it. No, the one thing I forgot to say in the book, I was laughing, is that I'm a Jerichoholic too. So, you know, I got that down there. But so, you know, after reading Proby's book, and then, you know, that was at a point in my life where I got really lucky because I met a wonderful woman that pretty much saved my life. And, you know, it was time for like a timeout, and mm-hmm. a good friend of mine, Kevin Allen, he just got inducted to the Hockey Hall of Fame as a journalist. He's the hockey writer for the USA Today. He's covered the Wings for 25 years, and him and I are friends. And he called me and said, I hear you're thinking about doing a book. When you're ready, I want to do it with you. And you know what, at that moment, it sort of kicked it into becoming a reality, because I wanted to do it, because first of all, that's somebody I highly respect, but somebody I highly trust.
Right.
With, you know, laying your laundry out on the line and knowing that he's going to, you know, nurture it, and it's not going to, he's going to get your word out the way you want it. So I moved down to Clearwater, Florida, yeah, about a year and a half ago, and hanging out with your buddy X-Pac there for a bit. And so I got the book done, and I'm happy. I couldn't be prouder of it. I think that the one thing that I wanted to do in my book, too, because if you notice when you read it, every chapter has a song title, or
yeah.
you the back of the playlist to the book. So you play the song and read the chapter, you get a gist of it. But, you know, I wanted to make it, because remember the old vinyl records we used to get where your kids, you put the record on, but you get the whole booklet and the yeah. artistry and the words and everything. You know, it was like a, you know, it was you know, a moment that you had just, you know, you're listening to the music, but you're flipping through, looking at the pictures, reading the words. You know, I wanted it to have some sort of interactive way, but to for people to realize how influential music is in my life.
Right, yeah.
Good, bad, or indifferent has gone through, and I know that you can relate to that.
Absolutely, and it was really cool to kind of see that. It was like the playlist for Darren McCarty's life at the end of the book. I thought that was a pretty cool touch.
Yeah, so the next step is the audio book. So when we do that, it'll be a little different where I'll read the book, but before each chapter, the songs will come in. So it'll give it a different feel. And you can get, I think that when you see the music, because it's all different kinds of music, that, you know, but it all pretty much explains itself.
Well, it's interesting, too. You mentioned really early on about Bob Probert. I mean, obviously one of the most famous players on the ice, and also one of the most craziest off the ice. And you also talked about John Cordick, who also had that kind of vibe about him as well. Both guys have since passed away. When you first came to the Wings, you mentioned that Probert was kind of a mentor for you on the ice and off the ice. Was it almost like, were you almost seeing him? Like, did you guys go out and party a lot right away? Did you find a kindred spirit in him? Did that kind of make it seem like it was okay to be so crazy off the ice because Proby was doing it?
Well, yeah, and you know, because of that, and it wasn't like always crazy, but you know, it's crazy moments. But also too is that you know, sometimes with sports, and I'm sure you can relate to, is that, you know, when you're on the ice or in the ring or whatever, and you got to be 100 miles an hour with your hair on fire, it's tough to shut that down when you step away.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes, you know, you want the guy on the ice, you know, you have to deal with him off the ice. So, you know, you learn how to deal with that. That's the one thing that, you know, the balance is what the thing that I was always fighting for, and still am trying to get under control, because, you know, it's with the adrenaline and the addictive personality, but, you know, like playing and being so fired up and doing what you have to do and having, you know, having to go out and beat ass and, you know, do things like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's tough to dial it down after. I mean, there's no switch where you can just, you know, say, oh, let's turn it on. Oh, turn it off. No, you know, so in that way, learning how to deal with it and learning how, you know, to work with it that way, that's a lot of the, you know, leads to a lot of the struggle or a lot of the different things, but also it's, you got to learn how to deal with it. And I think that's what comes with age, you know, mm-hmm. 41 now, I'm not 21. I wish I knew at 41 back then, because I would have done some things a little different, but you know, it is what it is.
You know, it's interesting. You bring up a good point. It's something that I deal with quite a bit too. When you perform kind of later on at night, like let's say a hockey game starts at 7:30, ends at 10:30. Same thing with a live show. If you're doing a concert or if you're doing, you know, a wrestling show.
Yeah.
When you're ending the night at 11 o'clock. Then you got to travel after, you got to, you know, get your stuff off, go to the hotel. You know, it's 12:30, 1 o'clock at night. And it, like you just said, it's hard to shut it off, especially when you're such an aggressive type of a player. You got such a hard-nosed way of playing. It is hard to shut that down. And it is hard to sit in those four walls of the hotel room. I can understand how it'd be easy to want to go out and do something just to get out of the room and go get, you know, get your mind clear.
Just to wind down.
Exactly.
You know, like especially because whether it's on stage, in the ring, on the ice, I mean, your adrenaline, you're fired, you're giving everything you got. You can't just, you know, when you get done, I mean, you gotta, you know, find a way to. That's what you do. You find a way to medicate, you know,
yeah,
to come down to be able to survive. And that's, you know, that's the big thing that I could talk about. Is that, like, a lot of guys, it's self medication, and you look at around. You know, you look in wrestling, wrestling's a lot like hockey. And with as far as, like, you know, with the guys have gotten into different things because they just, not only because of the pain that they're in and different, you know, surgeries and self-medicating, it's just trying to do it on your own, not properly doing it. And
yeah.
I think that you see the sad things with guys like Derek Bougards and Rick Rippins and Wade Bielak and, you know, where, the suicide comes in and it happens more than people think. Because, you know, it's just find a way to do it. I think it's getting better. I think society is getting smarter to realize and to help. But, I mean, it's still an issue out there, and it's just something that I wanted to, you know, in my book, what I wanted, there was three things that I wanted to come across. One is that, you know what, maybe somebody can relate to the things that I've gone through and know that they're not alone no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I wanted to get the message out that, you know, that here's some warning signs. So if you're in this situation, you know, if I can stop somebody from going through something that I have because they read my book or because they've seen it, that's, you know, that's perfect. And third, with the stories, because the book's 25% hockey, 75% life. But, you know, in team sports, a lot of times it's brotherhood and family gets thrown around little loosely. Well, we won four cups, and we won those cups because we were showing those stories. We were just as tight off the ice as we were on the ice, and we were a family, and that's why we won.
That's one thing about pro hockey, and it's kind of like that in wrestling. Wrestling's a bit more of an individual sport, but it definitely, you see that in the band situation. But hockey, you have such a camaraderie with the guys in the dressing room, and it becomes a real tight-knit family situation, no doubt about it. When you're talking about the Red Wings from the 90s, I mean, you guys were probably one of the best teams in pro hockey history. Would you agree with that?
I think that from, you know, 96 to probably 02, that's arguably, you know, I don't want to say dynasty, but, you know, it's pretty close to, you know, one of the – we can stand up with our lineup and talent and what we did with a lot of other teams.
I agree with that. And also, too, I think that's one of the reasons why you had such a great career is you were – the word role player is almost, I mean, that definitely is a good way to describe it, but you had such an important part in the team. You weren't the Steve Yzerman, but yet your line, you're the grind line. There's always, every great team always has a line like this that's scoring, fighting, checking. You guys were just as important to winning those cups as Steve Yzerman was, in my opinion.
Well, you know, it's pretty cool. Somebody brought this up, is that, you know, it says something because we just had the Winter Classic here. We played in the alumni game.
Yeah.
But reporter said, you know, if you think of in Detroit hockey history or even around the league, you know, you got the production line and then you got the grind line. I mean, you know what I mean? You got the Russian five. You got the Russian five. But to have if you mention any hockey fan, the grind line, they know exactly what you're talking about. So, you know what? I'll never be in the Hall of Fame, but I don't need to be. I was happy to be a cog in the wheel and to ride shotgun to so many Hall of Famers and famous guys. And you know what the thing is that I knew how much they appreciated me, and that's all I needed.
Well, I mean, and you're talking about how tight you are as well, and obviously one of the famous moments in your book and one of the famous moments in your career is just the tuning of Claude Lemieux, where you just whipped his ass after, I mean, it was a pretty rough hit. He hit your line mate and teammate Chris Draper from behind, smashed him in the boards, messed him up pretty good. And I love kind of how you told the story in your book, My Last Fight, about how you didn't go out and go to, you know, scalp him right away. You waited for the right moment to go out there and kind of get your quote-unquote revenge, which was, you know, the Bloody Wednesday game. Did you know in the heat of the moment, did you have any idea that you were making hockey history when you went out there and kicked his ass?
You know what? You know, but here's the whole thing, the most important part of that game. I mean, that game was a Hollywood script in itself, just the way it played out for me anyways, because not only was I able to extract revenge, I only got 4 minutes and then came back and scored the overtime winner.
Right.
And that's the whole thing going into the game is that, you know what, I was going to take my shot at him, but it was more important for us to win the game because the year before we set the league record with 62 wins and lost to Colorado in the conference finals. And we hadn't beaten them at all in this year, so they sort of had our numbers. So the most important thing was winning the game. And what I always say is if Claude Lemieux wants to get mad at anybody, be mad at Peter Forsberg because he started that melee with Igor Larionov. So, yeah, and in the way that all worked out and we were able to win, and then, you know, obviously in hindsight, be able to go on the way to win back-to-back cups. It definitely greatest game I ever played in, and, you know, something that, you know, what can you say? Looking back, you know, 16 years later, you can see the impact that it had. But at the time, no, I don't think so. I just wanted, you know, extract some revenge for what he did to my buddy.
It's interesting, too. You mentioned how you do a lot of autograph signings now and about how you and Lemieux do signings together and sign pictures together. Or how is that to kind of sit down? Are you guys buddies now at this point in time or at least cordial to each other?
Yeah, exactly. Cordial is good. I mean, you know, I don't condone what he did on the ice, and I don't really respect him as not how he played, but he was a great player, great playoff performer. But, you know, I don't like how cheap he was, but as a man and off the ice, I mean, he does all these signs. He signs the turtle picture, which is me pummeling him, and he signs the turtle, too. And he gives all his money that he does to charity. So, I mean, he's. I got no problem with him as a man. Like I can, you know, shake his hand and sit there and converse with him. But you know, we're not going out for beers anytime soon.
What Darren's talking about is in hockey when you're beating somebody up, the term is turtle, where they will. Will you explain what turtling is?
Okay, well, turtling and actually, well, when you turtle is when the guy is going to fight you and you don't want to fight, you bury your head. You know, you go down on the ice and try not to get hit. But like I mentioned in the book, Claude even said, he goes, I didn't turtle. He said, that was the hardest punch I ever took. He said, I saw stars and I was out for a split second. So I'll go with that one, whatever he wants.
I like how he's signing his turtle. I always used to hate Lemieux. He's the guy, he reminded me a lot of a guy like Fleury or something where you hated him unless he was on your team and then you loved him. That's, you know, he played so dirty.
Right. Exactly. So
you mentioned that you hit him so hard. Who hit you? Who landed the best punch on you in all your years on hockey?
Well, the scariest one, and the one is my good buddy, who eventually was a teammate of mine, Joey Koser. My first year when I was in Detroit, and he was in New York, and obviously I'm trying to set the tone for myself or whatever. Never been so scared, but we squared off and he threw a punch, and I ducked, and he chipped a piece of my helmet off.
Wow.
And we got tangled up, and we hit our heads on the ice. And he looks at me and goes, "You okay, kid?" And I go, "Thanks for not killing me, Mr. Kosher." So we talk about that to this day. But, yeah, took the side piece right off my helmet.
Was there anybody that you hated having to fight?
Hated having to any of the guys that were, you know, fighting in hockey was fun until they put the tie down rolling. Because smaller guys like me who could, you know, I'm more of a pugilist, you know what I mean? I'm more of a, like, I got to use my skills to my advantage, whether I can't just, you know, I'm not big enough to stand there with the big guys and go toe-to-toe. So back in the day, like, even growing up, it was, you know, an art form to be able to fight the bigger guys, to be able to get out of your jersey or to be able to, you know, use that to their advantage. Put the tie-down rule, and then I got to fight a guy like George of the Rack, who's 6'4", 260 pounds, you know, that's no bueno.
That's interesting. Now, a tie-down is when they implemented this policy where they would actually put a button on the back of the sweater, and it would go to the back of your hockey pants, so you couldn't pull the jersey over the face, basically, right?
Yeah, over the head. But, you know, in doing that, when they didn't implement it, you didn't have to have it down. Then you could. There's a way to, you know, guys who fought all the time can get out of their jerseys. So, you know, you don't give another guy something to grab onto. It gives you some sort of an advantage. So. And then they put in the rule that if you weren't tied down or your jersey came off, then you'd get kicked out of the game. So
wow, okay,
that's what fighting didn't become fun anymore.
So now let me ask you this: you're talking about you know, such a tight knit team and how great you guys were and winning 4 Stanley Cups. I mean, a lot of players never win one. I know to this day, my father will never touch the Stanley Cup because he had his chance in 72 and the Rangers lost to Boston. He doesn't want to touch it. He doesn't want to look at it. I mean, how was that for you to win the Stanley Cup, and not just once, I mean, 4 times? I mean, that's every Canadian kid's dream.
Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable, and especially, you know, I mean, they're like kids, you know, they're all special in their own way and they all have their own storyline. But for me, growing up just across the border, in Canada from Detroit, I grew up a Wings fan, and that was, you know, late 70s, early 80s when they were the Dead Wings. And all my cousins and my buddies were Toronto, Montreal fans, so I had to hear from it. So to be able to, after 42 years, to be able to raise that cup in 97 and be, you know, hometown kid and knowing the history and knowing what it meant, I mean, that was a pretty surreal experience. And then to be able to do it back-to-back and then do it again in 02 and then do it again after my comeback in LA, that it's, you know, something that, you know, I'm blessed. I'm blessed. The good Lord's got his hand on me, for sure.
And not to mention 4 cups with the same team. I mean, that's amazing over the course of like 14 or 12 years or so, correct?
Yeah, and then, I had a little stint in Calgary there, which I loved. Loved Calgary.
Yeah, Calgary's a great city.
It's a great city. Great people, great fans. Had fun there, and then I was able to come back to Detroit in 08 and be able to come back to the team and be able to be a part of winning the Cup. So, I mean, that was amazing, too.
So let's talk about when you win the Cup. So how does it work? Like, you get the Cup, and then over the course of the summer, every player gets it for 24 hours or something along those lines?
Yeah, 24 to 36, depending on what it is. And, you know, Kenny Holland, general manager, whatever, will map out, you know, because it's got to go to Sweden, it's got to go to Russia, it's got to, you know, make its rounds. So they'll give me a block of time so if I'm in the Detroit area, which at the time I was, and you'll have more accessibility to it because it's around here for functions and more, but you'll get to pick a date, and everybody picks a date, and, you know, then you have your family party or bash, or, you know, take it to your golf club, or, you know, take it all around. And the most fun thing is that if you're from Detroit, and probably in 97, 98, and you haven't drank out of the cup, then you weren't out in public, because we took that thing everywhere. It's 17 and a half beers to fill it right to the top where it just bubbles over, it doesn't spill.
What's the crazy 17 and a half beers is what you can fill it with? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Seven, you got it down to a science. 17 and a half.
Yeah.
What kind of beer?
Usually Bud Light.
Okay.
So what's PBR.
What's the craziest thing you ever did with the cup?
The craziest thing?
I mean, you had it for 4 days total, right? So
I know. We, you know, we I took it put on the back of the Harley, took it for a ride, all around people like that. The most fun thing was when we were 1 and 08, I got four kids, and we took it over to our favorite ice cream shop and put a huge sundae in it. And you got to remember, it's the cup's metal, too, so it kept that ice cream super cold. So there's a few ice cream headaches going on in our family, I think.
So do you clean it out beforehand, though? Like, do you, like, disinfect it before you eat out of it?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Folks, hell yeah, dude. You don't know what other guys have done in that thing.
No kidding, right? I know my friend Vinny Paul. You know Vinny, I'm sure. The cup ended up in the bottom of his pool. Vinny Paul from Pantera.
I heard that story. Lukowicz or whatever. I heard that story.
Yeah, I'm sure, like you said.
It's happened a few times.
Now, how heavy is it to hold that over your head?
Probably about 35 pounds.
Yeah, man.
Probably like one of your championship belts.
Do you know who's the guy with the white gloves that accompanies the cup everywhere?
That's the cup cop.
The cup cop.
Yeah, the cup cop.
What does he do?
Usually Phil or Walt. Well, they implemented this after the Rangers had it in 93, where they used to have it unattended.
Uh-huh.
And there's some shenanigans went on. So now on that, every team has to pay the Hall of Fame for a guy to travel around with it. And he's perfect, because what you do, he just sits, he just watches the cup. So if you're out at a party or at a bar or whatever like that, so you don't have to be responsible. He stands right next to it and makes sure they watches everybody have a good time. And and it's funny, because you get to know him. I mean, Walt was my guy, and, you know, when I'd have the cup after the first year or whatever, when he'd have it with me, he just to crash in the spare bedroom at my house, so it worked out good.
I remember I did the NHL awards. I presented one of the awards back, and I think it was 2002, and I saw that guy, and he's like, "Oh, Chris Jericho, here, come go stand in this closet for a second." I go, "Why?" He goes, "Just go in there. Trust me. I'll give you 2 minutes." So, okay. So I go in there, and there's a big box, and I opened it up, and the cup was in it. And I was just like, I touched it and looked at it, but I couldn't lift it up, but I was just like, "Oh, it was just so cool to see it, you know?"
Yeah, that was, you know, and one of the coolest, you know, I just remember what the coolest thing is, was that I, like, for me personally, was like at the end of the night, probably about 5 in the morning or whatever like that, after festivities dialed down, I remember taking it upstairs to the shower and putting it in the shower and getting in and having to, you know, washing it off and having a shower with it and just going through all the names and all the teams and, you know, all the mistakes that are on it, like the spelling mistakes or the X's out and stuff, and
yeah,
to see the history of it, and, you know, spending like an hour just, you know, taking it all in. That's pretty, to have that piece of special history in your house, in your possession for that amount of time is pretty cool.
That's unbelievable experience. 4-time Stanley Cup champion. We'll be back right away with some more Darren McCarty, but first, I got to show my sponsors some love.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
You're back with Darren McCarty, 4-time Stanley Cup champion. That means you got 4 Stanley Cup rings. Do you wear them all 4 of them?
No, they're for the kids. They're in the safety deposit box. I mean, you probably wear it. I took it out to wear it to a game the other day, but I mean, you might wear it a couple times a year, but. They'll say that they're beautiful, but they're too big and too big and gaudy to wear regular. Like, I mean, Mrs. Illich did spare no expense.
So each owner buys the different style of rings?
And exactly. They design it. Like, they're all different.
Wow.
They design, like, the first one's like gold with diamonds. Second one's diamonds, and it's got rubies and the red wing across, which is smaller. And the third one's a lot like that, but the red wing is red, and it's different. Then the last one is absolutely just bling diamonds. Oh, your arse. I mean, it's like,
wow.
The last one is like, God, you know, it's almost like Mr. Illich is just like building up. Because the last one, I think, is like appraised at like $25,000.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't realize that each one was different. I thought it was just kind of a set thing, and they give them to the same guys every year. Oh, wow.
No, he designed all of them. Jim and Kenny Holland designed every ring, make them all different.
Was it the same owner for all the years? Was it Mike Ilitch was the owner all four cups?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, best owner in sports.
So let's talk about your other side of your professional life, your band Grindr. Like we said, Darren's book is My Last Fight, the true story of a hockey rock star. And rock star appeals in many different ways, but he actually did sing in a band that toured quite a bit. I was very interested in reading about Grindr in your book. How did you decide to start that, and how did you get it up and rolling?
The band?
Yeah, the band Grindr, yeah.
The band, it started after 97 we won, and then Vladimir Konstantinov, our top defenseman, got in that limo accident.
Yeah.
And I was tight with a bunch of guys in the local scene, and the local bands wanted to put a compilation CD together of songs to help raise money, you know, for Vladdy or for his charity and stuff like that. And they came up with the idea that we should form a band and write a tune and put it on it. So, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. I dabbled in music, but I mean, I'm not a musician, but I always loved music and, you know, was like, okay, with not knowing anything about, you know, singing from your diaphragm and, you know, like
right.
All the stuff you have to learn. But I was into it. So we did that. We wrote a song called Step Outside, which is, it worked out. But I mean, I'd like to re-record it now.
Yeah.
I think I have a few more ideas, a little bit more advanced in my musical knowledge now. But so we did that, and we ended up, it sort of took off, and we ended up writing a little six-song demo, and for the next few years in the summertime, we go around and play locally in Michigan and in Canada, and I had a blast with it. And then, so then we got away from it for a bit, and then after we won in 02, Kid Rock's a good buddy of ours, and he was playing our cup party, and I got up on stage with him and my lead guitarist, Billy Reed, who's a great friend of mine for many years, got up there, and we started jamming out, and he's like, hey, you want to, you know, because we haven't played in a few years, he goes, you want to put the band back together for a bit? All right, so we put it back together and went out for a couple years, and a lockout came up.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of guys, you know, went to Europe, and a lot of guys did other things. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go tour for the lockout if we're not playing hockey. So
wow.
So we played 85 shows, from the Roxy in L.A. to the Vegas we played, you know, Texas. We
That's a long tour, 85 shows.
Yeah, it was over probably the year, but it was
right.
it was stashed out. But I mean, we'd be gone for maybe 2 weeks at a time, at the most. But we had it going, and then we wrote our last album, called Out of Our Heads. And which is, another thing that I'm very proud of, because myself and then my bass player, James Andrews, rest in peace, he's the one that taught me, you know, the most about music, most about listening. He pretty much just said, hey, you got to listen to everything comes from the Beatles and maybe Zeppelin, and then forget everything else.
Right.
We sat down and you know, because I can... You know, I hear music good, but I can't play it or whatever. So they lay down they lay down the music, and I'd write the words. And
so,
we copulate on that, and we got that album done. And I mean, that was an awesome experience. But you know what happened on May fifth in 04 or 05? Jim had a coronary edema on the phone with his wife and died. So pretty much after that, we finished up the tour with another guy. We had like 10 shows left, and then I just shut the band down after that. So and then going to Calgary and coming back, we haven't really had a chance to play. But Millie and I, my guitarist, have been messing around and thinking about getting her back going this summer.
So you were like one of the only, maybe the only guy in hockey that had a band. How did the Red Wings management or your teammates look at that?
Not very well.
No, why is that?
Just because they thought that that was taking distraction. Mm. I was worried about distractions, or that was, you know, my focus. But, you know, at the time we weren't playing hockey, so
right.
You know, and then I probably, you know, could have, you know, heated a little bit more. I mentioned in my book, you know, like it probably wasn't a good thing. I was trying to capitalize on training camp. We go to Traverse City every year, and they wanted me to cut back on the band, and I decided to play one last show up there, so that didn't really go over very well. We all got over it.
Well, you were always kind of the rebel of the team. I mean, even you mentioned you tested positive for marijuana over 30 times as a player. Did you ever worry about losing your NHL gig because of stuff like that?
You know what? Here's the thing, and this is the thing that goes right back to the beginning of this conversation about the Proby level, is that the difference between Proby and I, and I learned this from him, is that I got to learn where the line was. And he had trouble stopping at the line. Now I'll get to the line, whether it's the cliff or the edge, and I may lean over it, but because, you know, good Lord willing and whatever, there's always something that brings me back where I don't go over too far.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I don't go over the line. Mm-hmm. I go right up to the line, but you know but also too is that that's a thing that I learned also from paying attention from you know, mistakes that Bob made and mistakes that, you know, I could make too, and I just was fortunate not to.
I mean obviously, okay, you get close to the line, were you getting fined if you test positive?
Yeah, I got fined. There are repercussions.
Right.
But I didn't get suspended, but I got fined.
So what would
a few times.
I mean, would you ever, I mean, obviously you mentioned that you're a functioning alcoholic, very much drinking at the time, a lot. Would your teammates see this, or would your coach see this?
Well, at the time in my career, you know, I'd gone 10 years without drinking.
Oh.
You know, I quit for, you know,
right.
Usually January at every year, you know what I mean? I take it, and for a lot later in my career, while I played, I was sober.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until, you know, after when I retired or when I was away, you know, because, you know, my alcoholism is very public,
mm-hmm.
and prevalent. So, I mean, it's not like that I could hide, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hide it, so it was not do it. And that's the whole thing about me being honest now, yeah. Sure, I still drink. You know, I try to keep it to a few beers and stay away from the liquor and stuff like that. But I mean, it is, you know, it is the way that helps me get by.
And mm-hmm.
you know, that is what I have to do. So it wasn't so much, you know, when I was playing earlier, younger. When I was younger, in the, like at the beginning in the early 20s, oh yeah, I was just 100 miles an hour, my hair on fire, all over the place. So. Well, sometimes you have to learn to temper it back at certain times, you know?
Well, absolutely. But like you said, you kept coming back and kept playing on winning teams and kept doing your job. So obviously it might have been affecting you, but not too badly, at least when you were playing.
Well, things get overlooked a little bit when you win.
Well, yeah, that's right, huh? No, but how was it for you, though, in 2009 when you finally retired? How was that? Was it an agonizing decision to step away after playing hockey your whole life?
Dude, I was so beat up. Mm-hmm. And, like, third or hernia surgery, and I was done. I mean, plus, you know, this isn't my game. You know, this isn't the game I grew up playing. Games change, it's different. I was happy to hang it up. You know, I miss everything about the game. You know, the travel, the locker room, the guys, I miss all that. I don't miss playing at all.
Which way do you mean when you say it wasn't your game? How did the game change?
Well, you know, they're taking more of the fighting out of hockey, you know, it's more of a, you know, the defense that can't touch, you can't hold a guy up anymore, you can't really protect your teammates, you got, you know, it's Batman hockey now, and that wasn't the game I grew up playing, you know, it's, you know, the liberties guys take on each other nowadays, and the lack of respect, it's just, this stuff didn't happen back, you know, when I played. So, I mean, it's like, you know, I'm still a hockey fan and a fan of the Wings, but, I mean, it's not, you know, I miss the game that we played in the 90s.
That makes sense. It's funny how it changes always. I mean, even wrestling for me has changed since I first started, to where a lot of times you don't know what's good and what's bad anymore because the whole style of what you used to do has changed.
No, that's exactly 100%. And, you know, it's, you know, I guess it's, you know, the way that the evolution of every sport and the way that it always happens. But, you know, when you're in the middle of it, sometimes you just shake your head.
Yeah. You know what another interesting thing to me about reading your book was, too, is you mentioned when you finally started making, I mean, you're always making good money, but you're making big money. You guys get paid twice a month, and the check would be like $100,000 a month. I mean, that is unbelievable big money to be making for a young guy.
So, yeah, and more money, more problems. More money, more friends, more money, more problems.
Yeah,
sometimes. So,
you mentioned... You mentioned that you made $16 million over your career and now have basically none of it anymore.
Right, exactly. Between divorce and bankruptcy and stuff like that, I'm surviving, but, you know, I mean, I ain't living like I once was. But, you know what, to me, I'm much happier now.
Yeah.
I'm much happier with a lot less.
Hmm.
You know what, I mean, I have a great woman. You know what I mean? Kids are healthy. You know, I'm on a new journey with this book, which has opened up some opportunities. And, you know, I'm in a good place, and I'm in a better place than, you know, I have been in a lot of years, you know, and it's just, you know, work in progress, I guess.
You know, it's amazing though, like you said, I mean, how much money a pro athlete can make and also how easy it is to spend it and waste it. And how a lot of times you don't see, I guess the saying of you don't see the forest through the trees, as far as you don't realize just how much pressure there is on you and how, I mean, we've all done it. You make stupid decisions when you're in the moment, because I noticed that you said you felt like you were the king of the world, like no one could touch you. And you're not the only one that ever felt that way, man. I mean, it happens to a lot of us throughout our careers.
No, you know, it doesn't matter. I think that's the whole point, and two is that it doesn't matter where you come from, whether you're a professional athlete like we are, or a guy that goes to work on the line in the morning. We all go through different things in our life, and it's just sort of persevering. It's sort of, you know, I never give up and never surrender, because, you know, it's things can always get better.
Right. Absolutely.
And to believe in that, and to actually live through that. That's, you know, sometimes it's a lot harder just to believe that would happen. But trust me, you know, as I write about it, it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, going back to hockey, who were the best guys that you played against in the league during the years you played?
Well, Gretzky had his last and I got, you know, Mario Lemieux, which was amazing to watch. But the one guy that always I catch myself staring at watching when I wasn't on the ice playing against him was Joe Sakic in Colorado.
Wow.
I just thought, you know, here's just to watch that guy shoot the puck with that, you know, in the stride. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that you always watch and always try to work on. And it's funny because even Stevie Y was a huge Joe Sakic fan and would always, you know, we'd always talk about that. There's different guys that you watch around the league, you know, when you play against it, you're just amazed by. You know, at the end of my career, you know, I got play against like Sidney Crosby and Ovechkin, and those kids are amazing too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different, you know, sort of a different, you know, gone from Gretzky and Lemieux to Crosby and Ovechkin. So that covers the gamut a lot. But
sure,
yeah, I played with some extraordinary players and against a lot of great world class players too.
Do you think there'll ever be another guy as dominant as Gretzky or Lemieux as far as getting 200 points in a season?
You know what, It's tough to say. You know, if you put a gun in my head, I'd say that right now the closest would be Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that ability to put points up. But the game, you know, the game's changed too. And, you know, as far as it's tough to stay healthy for 82 games, you know, let alone put up, you know, you put up a point a game, that's pretty impressive. So
absolutely.
I don't think that. And the way that the goalies are these days and stuff, it's tough to say, you know. I don't see it happening, but if Crosby did it, I, you know, wouldn't be surprised.
It's so interesting. It's like a guy like Gretzky, you know, it's like Eddie Van Halen on guitar. The guy came out at a time and basically was a pioneer and changed the way the game was played, changed the way the guitar was played. And then there's so many people that have come afterwards, but no one can ever really capture that magic that a Gretzky had or a Van Halen had. It's almost like the time was right at that period. And now, I mean, especially in hockey, guys are bigger, goaltenders are bigger. I just don't know if there's enough space for a guy to be as dominant as Gretzky was.
Right, and guys are faster and guys are bigger. And you know what, like, the thing with Gretzky back in the day, like, he just bought himself so much time to be able to make the play. You know, now there's not that much space and that much time on the ice out there.
Right.
You got to move it quick, but it's that's a great analogy because, you know, those are two guys that at the time when they came out, they were doing some things that nobody else ever has.
Yeah, no
one else. Probably nobody else never will.
That's right. That's right. What do you miss the most about playing hockey?
Dressing room.
Yeah.
Messing around with the guys.
Yeah.
You know, pranking each other, hanging out, you know, stuff like that.
What was your favorite prank that you ever did to somebody?
I was usually the one getting pranked. I think, you know, there's a couple good ones where the best one was at Ozzy's bachelor party, and it was not even on a teammate, it was on one of his buddies who passed out. We were golfing the next day, and Ozzy and his buddy, we wrote I am a boozer on the back of his calves.
Uh-huh.
It took till the 17th hole, the cart girl to say, "Hey boozer, you want another drink?" And he's like, "What are you calling me that?" Well, that's what your name is, isn't it? Look, you know, it took the 17 holes to figure out if you were laughing for it. Walk around at a posh country club with I'm a boozer on the back of your legs.
And Ozzy would be Chris Osgood,
goal. And between him and Kirk Bobby, they're the biggest pranksters, you know, I ever played with.
That's the funny thing about hockey I've noticed, too, is like most of the guys are small-town Canadians, and it's just a better – I mean, I don't know. I've never been a real in a locker room for, you know, football or basketball or whatever, but it just seems like, you know, small-town Canadians get together. It's just a better atmosphere. It just – I don't know. It seems like a little bit more of a old-school fun pranking each other rather than how much bling you can have and how many cars you can buy.
Oh, yeah, that's not happening in there. I mean, you walk into a hockey room and you're bragging about your jeans or your, you know, what car you got. You're not going to last very long. So.
That's right. Okay, and of all the goals you score, how many goals did you score throughout your career?
127.
What's the one that stands out the most?
Well, the cup final clinching one in 97 against Philadelphia, where I beat Yanni Nienema 1-on-1 and then scored on Hextall. And tell everybody, I beat one guy one-on-one my whole career. It's all timing.
That's right, man. That's right. Darren, it's been great talking to you, man. It was really a really cool, interesting read and pulling for you huge. My Last Fight, The True Story of a Hockey Rockstar, is Darren's book. You have to read this if you enjoy hockey, if you enjoy music. But like he said, it's 75% life. It's a real story about kind of going to the edge of the world and coming back. And what do you have coming up? What's your plans for the future, Darren?
Right now, we're just in the midst of this book thing, and I haven't even hit Canada yet, so just taking through Michigan here in this beautiful foot and a half of snow that we have. So, I mean, you can hear me hacking and coughing. I've been snowblowing my buddy LJ for the last 2 days, so I think it's -6 outside today, too, so that's
nice.
Might not be making it out today, but no, just doing the book thing, and got some speaking engagements and some public appearances coming up in the future, but just going to ride this book thing out, buddy.
All right, man. Well, it's a great book. Like I said, congratulations. And congratulations to everything you've gone through and for turning it all around. And from the hockey fan inside of me, four-time Stanley Cup winner, man, that's something I'm super impressed and super proud of you for that.
Well, thanks, buddy. You know, I'm a big fan of yours, too. Can't wait to catch up with you again and Fozzie on, bud.
Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon, Darren.
See you, Chris.
Bye, buddy.
Thanks to Darren McCarty, four-time Stanley Cup champion. Do you know how amazing that is? That is, I've always said the Stanley Cup is the hardest trophy to win in pro sports because you got to win 16 games. It's not like the NFL where it's one game, or like Major League Baseball where it's, you know, I think it's 14 or something along those lines, if that. 16 games you got to win, and McCarty won four of them. All right, time to take a few calls. I always post the number. You got to be careful. You got to be watching. Pay attention to that Twitter, at Talk is Jericho. Let's see who we got. Rob from Ontario is on the line. Where in Ontario are you from, Rob?
Chad, I'm right near the Windsor-Detroit border.
Oh, right down there. Yeah, I know that. I know that area. What's going on, man? How you doing?
Good. I was always a huge-time Chris Jericho fan. I didn't really know a lot about Fozzy until 2005 when the WWE started using your guys' Enemy song.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to know more about the, what was your name? Mongoose McQueen alter ego and sort of the beginning of Fozzy.
Well, when we first started the band, it was kind of just almost like a side project. It was just a fun thing. We were playing covers as Fozzy Osbourne, which is where the name came from. And because Chris Jericho and Rich Ward from Stuck Mojo, who was pretty big at the time, were in a band together, we got a record deal kind of right off the bat without even doing anything as a cover band. So I thought, rather than just be a normal cover band, let's do a little spin on it and do like a Blues Brothers type thing or a Traveling Wilburys and come up with alter egos and different names and kind of take it from there. So that's how it all started. And for the first year and a half, we did have alter egos, Mongoose McQueen and Duke LaRue and all these ton of different names. And then we did the Howard Stern show in 2002 in a battle of the bands against Howard's band that was called The Losers. And we decided, listen, if we're going to go in the Howard Stern show, we better just kind of drop all these, you know, different names and just go in as ourselves. And we did that. We kicked Howard's band's ass. And after that, we decided just to do our own thing and do it our own way. So, yeah, it was like for the first couple years of the band, it was kind of a different vibe, kind of a fun type of a thing with the alter egos and stuff like that. And then it kind of morphed into what it is today.
Wow, I can't believe I didn't know about the Howard Stern show. I'm also a huge Howard Stern fan. I never saw
it's up on
that.
He was doing this thing where he would do a battle of bands against celebrities that had bands. I know he had like Corey Feldman's band and I think, you know, Tina Yothers or whoever, Kevin Bacon, and he was beating them all. Like, he said that his band could beat any celebrity band, and then we came out there and we crushed them. And it was funny. It was the only time that the Losers ever got a vote against them. And we lost 2-1, and I was so mad about it. But after I saw Howard, he's like, listen, he goes, the only reason why you guys won is because it's my show. And I couldn't, you know, I can't allow myself to lose because you guys killed me and we're never doing this again. And they never did. So Fozzy.
Yeah, Howard's famous giant ego.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Howard was actually really cool though, man. He was kind of just playing a character like we were. So, but cool, man. Well, thanks for listening to Talk is Jericho and thanks for calling in, Rob.
Oh, I listen every day or every week, twice a week now. Thanks for the second show a week.
Thanks, man. Well, stay warm up there. I know it's been pretty crazy, so be cool.
I'll try.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, man.
Yep, no problem.
All right, we got Adam from Chicago. How you doing, Adam?
Chris, I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. What's going on?
Not much. I did have a question. I just wanted to thank you. I've been dealing with some back issues, herniated disc, spinal stenosis, and I just ordered DDP yoga, and you were kind of the inspiration for me doing that, so I wanted to thank you for that.
Oh, no problem, man. Yeah, DDP yoga is the way to go. Very, 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 very cool. And actually, DDP is on the Shark Tank, I believe, later this week to pitch DDP yoga, if you've ever seen that. He's on February 21st, so let's wish him luck on that. Hopefully, he'll be able to sell DDP yoga for millions and help everybody. But that's a really cool, like, it changed my life, man. It really did. It completely changed the way I train. It changed the way I feel every morning, so I can never say enough about DDP yoga for sure.
Well, and like I said, your selling points on it inspired me to get the system, so I wanted to thank you. But also, as far as a question, I always enjoy hearing stories from on the road. So, do you have a funny story from on the road with wrestling or with Fozzy? Anything that you that really sticks out for you?
That's kind of like the most generic question ever. I think I have three books written about funny stories. Let's narrow it down a bit. Pick somebody, and chances are I'll have a funny story about them. Pick anybody in music or wrestling, and throw the name out there, and chances are I'll be able to think of something funny about it.
All right, how about Owen Hart?
Owen Hart. Well, it's interesting. I only had a few interactions with Owen before he passed away. I actually came to the WWE. That was one of my reasons why I jumped from WCW to WWE. was to be get a chance to hopefully wrestle with Owen, and then he passed away in May, and I came to the WWE, I believe it was in August. So I never got a chance to wrestle with him. But I do, it's not even really a funny story, it's more of just a story. I lived in Calgary for many years, as did Owen, and I was working in Japan at the time, and one time I got on my plane, and I was lucky enough to get upgraded to first class, and I sat down in a seat right next to Owen Hart, and I barely knew Owen. I barely knew him, but I just couldn't not talk to him, and it was about 7 a.m. in the morning. I could tell he wanted to sleep, and I wanted to sleep as well, but we got into this really great conversation, and you know, it was just one of those things where he was one of the guys. Like when I was a kid watching Stampede Wrestling, I used to draw pictures of the Stampede Wrestling tag team champions, Owen Hart and whatever my name was, Chris Jericho or Chris Irvin, I think it was. I was going to do a Christian gimmick like Striper. So I actually have this picture that I drew of me and Owen Hart as tag team champions. And when I met him on that plane ride, you know, I got a chance to really get to sit down for 2 or 3 hours and chat with him. And I'll never forget the one thing he said is he said, you know, always get to the airport early. It will kill you and will stress you out if you continue to get to the airport, you know, with 5 minutes to spare. And as a result of that conversation, I always get to the airport a half an hour before I'm supposed to so I can relax. And I remember he said, just relax, have a coffee, collect your thoughts, and that way you don't have to be freaking out and be running all over the place. So that's the one kind of little lesson I learned from Owen about life on the road is always get to the airport about half an hour early so you don't have to stress yourself out. So there you go.
Great. Well, absolutely. Well, hey, thanks again for taking my call. And I, again, I'm looking forward to trying DDP of it.
Give it a try, man. I'm glad you're doing it, man. Thanks for listening to the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks again, Chris.
All right. Once again, ddpyoga.com is where you need to go. If you're listening from the UK, DDP will be there from March 1st to March 11th. He's doing questions and answers. He's doing yoga exhibitions. Go to ddpyoga.com to get the information. And February 21st, he's going to be on the Shark Tank. So, Mark, what's that guy's last name? Mark Cuban. Give my boy a chance. Give him a shot. All right, and thanks for giving me a shot. You guys are awesome as always. This is the Pod of Thunder. We'll see you on Friday with the Hart family dynasty continues on with Natty Neidhart. We're just talking about her uncle Owen. Natty will be here on Friday to chat all things Hart, all things Total Diva. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Stay hard, stay cool, stay hungry. Peace and love. We'll see you on Friday. God bless you.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.